WhatsApp was banned in Brazil for 2 whole hours. Love for Leslie J on Twitter, Snapchat's creepy new patent application, and Lauren Hawkinson weighs in on the Pokemon Go side hustle. All that coming up on Tech News Today.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Tech News Today, episode 1558, recorded on the 19th of July, 2016. This episode of Tech News Today is brought to you by Igloo Software. Igloo is an intranet you'll actually like. It connects people with the information they need to do their best work. Try it for free at igloosoftware.com/twit or sign up for a live demo to see it in action. And by Trunk Club. Get clothes that fit and look amazing without ever stepping into a store again. Trunk Club will help you create the wardrobe you've always dreamed of with your own personal stylist. Go to trunkclub.com/TNT and join Trunk Club today. And by ZipRecruiter. Are you hiring? With ZipRecruiter.com, you can post to more than 100 job sites, including social networks, all with a single click. Screen, rate, and hire the right candidates fast. Try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/TNT. Hello, welcome to Tech News Today, the show where we talk about all the technology news with people who are passionate about technology. I am Megan Maroney. Jason Howell is out today, but joining me is Lauren Hawkinson from the Nothing Matters podcast. Welcome, Lauren.
Hi, Megan.
It's good to have you on the show. I know last time you were here, we missed a few of your most interesting insights due to some ping pong in the background.
Yes.
But this is no ping pong hour at your company.
I hope so. I hope so. I think that I am in the no ping pong zone. Fingers crossed.
Okay, excellent. Well, let's get started. Today, a judge blocked the Facebook-owned messaging tool WhatsApp for the third time in the past 8 months. This block, the judge claims, was going to be indefinite. However, as of 6:01 p.m. Rio de Janeiro time, the president of the Brazilian Supreme Court lifted the ban, saying it was disproportionate. The block lasted about 2 hours, in case you're wondering what their version of indefinite was this time. Each of the three blocks have come after the company has refused to hand over messages requested in a criminal investigation in a city outside of Rio. Each time the ruling was overturned within a few days, and each time WhatsApp has insisted that they can't turn over the information they don't have access to. Lauren, any ideas about why these judges keep doing this, expecting a different outcome every time?
Well, this is actually a really complicated issue. The Brazil telecom industry is actually private and has been private for quite some time, I believe since 1998. So the telecom companies in Brazil are privately owned. It's a private-owned utility, and they are notorious for having very, very, very intensely high cell phone bills in Brazil. And when WhatsApp came to the country, it revolutionized the way that people communicated. And there's a lot more to this that we're not necessarily seeing. This is kind of a mild analogy to the way that Apple was bumping up against the FBI a few months ago. But really what it comes down to is the idea that, personally, what I think is that WhatsApp is under fire in Brazil specifically because it is upended in industry and the government can't figure out the ways to control that, basically the way that WhatsApp has changed the landscape. And so as a result, you see these trials, you see these bans, and you see millions of people in Brazil left without their primary communication tool. WhatsApp is by far the most popular method of communication. It has allowed people to transcend all of the telecom infighting. And when it's gone, it's devastating for the Brazilian people. So I'm not necessarily surprised that they lifted the ban. I know that a lot of Brazilian politicians have expressed dismay over bans previously. But honestly, I don't think that Brazil is going to stop flexing on WhatsApp until it figures out a way to control it.
Yeah, I mean, as we were talking before on the show, the first time this happened, lots of people switched over to Telegram. Telegram said, you know, welcome. But as you looked earlier, they can't really support that that many people coming either. And, you know, once if they did have the support and they did grow as big as WhatsApp, I think the same thing would happen. And they also have end-to-end encryption, so they wouldn't be able to turn over the information either. I mean, it really is just a fact of like, hey, we can't give it to you. We've built a system so that we can't give you this information that you want, right?
Yes, and for all intents and purposes, I think that people sort of feel like the cat is kind of out of the bag communication-wise in Brazil. You know, WhatsApp is a thriving company. It is a part of Facebook. It does its what it does very well, and it is, you know, very well regarded throughout the world as a communication device, communication tool. And I think as a result, Brazil is trying to figure out how to shove that cat back into the bag. It's not necessarily working the way that they want it to.
No, the cats, they don't usually like to go back in the bag, sadly. Well, in other government requests for data news, Google released its transparency report today. Devendra Hardawar over at Engadget says government and court demands for our data are at an all-time high, and they do not appear to be slowing down. The report cites 40,677 worldwide requests to Google for our data in the second half of 2015. However, Google appears to be handing over less and less of this information. Does anything in this transparency report surprise you?
Not particularly. I think that people might necessarily feel shock that there are increasing requests. They might feel surprised that Google is handing over less information. But to be honest, this has kind of been the goal of these reports from day one. Google has been about transparency and been about talking about requests. And I think that they've also, as a company, sort of recognized that they need to kind of express a sort of judicious conscience when dealing with them. So I didn't see anything that was too surprising for me, but I did feel that there was definitely this idea of, you know, we're doing more to detect these things, and we're also thinking through them to understand what the implications of responding to these requests are. What did you think?
I agree. I mean, I think they're the ones, like you said, that that started this. More transparency is better. The U.S. still had the most requests. Then Google provided some sort of data in 79% of the requests. And like you also said, they have admitted more needs to be done to protect users' privacy. And it's good. I mean, but because they are collecting so much of our information. I mean, I use, you know, I don't have an Android phone, but all the services I use are Google services, you know, Gmail, Google Photos. I'm entrusting them with so much information, as are a lot of other people. So, yeah, I'm happy for the transparency. But, yeah, I'm not that surprised either.
Yeah, I think that it's really interesting to see. I wonder whether or not Google's example is going to be followed end to end by other companies. This idea that there needs to be more light on governmental requests. I mean, obviously, Facebook reports it yearly. Other companies do as well. But this idea that there needs to be less information turned over is something that's incredibly powerful. And I think it goes up against, you know, again, all of these tensions that we've seen about companies being a little bit warier about turning their information over to the government in global governments. So it'll be interesting to see whether or not that can actually turn into some kind of action.
Well, in other news, comedian Leslie Jones, who plays Patty in the new Ghostbusters movie, if you haven't seen it, I highly recommend it. She has left Twitter after relentlessly being first attacked by racists. Then she tried to expose those racists. Then she apparently at first did not get any help from the abuse team at Twitter. Twitter CEO Jack Dorsey eventually reached out to Jones on Twitter, but it looks like it might have been too late. Now, we've talked about abuse on Twitter before. Do you think things are getting better or worse, or are they pretty much the same?
I wish I had a really good read on this. The cynic in me says that it's probably getting worse, but the double cynic in me says it's always been this bad. I think that what you're running into here is a weird interaction of a lot of overboiled pots that have existed over the last few years. Since the moment that anybody even uttered the words like Ghostbusters with ladies, people have just freaked out. They've gone apoplectic. They've accused Paul Feig and Sony of ruining their childhood. They've said that women are most definitely not funny, that they can never make a joke, that this is going to destroy everybody's childhood, that somehow it's going to retroactively destroy the movie as it's the original movie as it stood with Bill Murray and Dan Aykroyd, and that it was just going to completely wreck this legacy. And a lot of people have fixated on this. And as a result, particularly the female actresses in the movie have gotten a serious amount of online harassment. And obviously, Leslie Jones's harassment has been particularly racially charged. And you sort of see this happen again and again and again. There's an internet, you know, subsection of people influenced by several well-known actors. I mean, you really can't talk about the Ghostbusters outrage without talking about Breitbart News' own Milo Yiannopoulos. And Milo is well known for directing his followers on Twitter to send out nasty online harassment and to bully people into getting off of Twitter. And I think that Jones's case is interesting in particular because she stood up to what she was facing and she tried her best to alert people about harassment that's going on Twitter. But Twitter has been caught in this situation where it has been trying to placate free speech activists or people who are really into that kind of thing, but also not necessarily giving the community tools to help regulate proper discourse, which I think is also really important. You know, what's the point of free speech if everybody is afraid of what's being said?
Exactly. I think there's also this moment in the, you know, her trying to expose the abuse where she pointed out something that I'm sure has happened to you. It has happened to me a lot. And I wanted to point out, because I'm sure people are well-meaning about this. She said, you know, to those of you who say, like, don't stoop to their level, like, it's beyond that. Like, please don't tell me how I need to react. Like, I hear that a lot, people saying, like, just don't respond to them. Never respond to them. And, you know, that is even, it's hard to hear that sometimes. I do know that it's coming from a well-meaning place, but it does seem to say, you know, I want to say to those people, like, I get to respond or not respond as much as I want. Yeah. Do you get that a lot?
Yeah, well, and also I think that there are a lot of people that I admire that are really well known on Twitter that experience the same thing. The one person that comes to mind in particular for me is Roxane Gay, who is well known author and Twitter person. And she deals with this all the time, and she deals with it in a very public way, where not only does she engage in discussions with people who are harassing her, but also she'll say, you know, you don't get to tell me how I react. And, you know, I'm allowed to defend myself and I'm allowed to say these things. And that's the other side of the coin, right? It's the idea that, you know, all these people want to do is silence a particular group of people by harassing them. And if you stay silent, then you're kind of doing what they want you to.
Mm-hmm. I totally agree. Kyle Ruggles in our chat room says, kill him with kindness. And that's sort of what is being done with the hashtag Love for Leslie J, which was started by Marissa Ray. I think some people in the media have said it was started by Paul Feig, but it was not. It was started by a woman of color, Marissa Ray. And if you go there now, like, there is only love. Like, she says, you know, send her, you know, cute pictures of animals and just support. And if you go there and you scroll through, it's right when I scrolled through before, it was only positive messages for her. So, I mean, I don't know. As of that moment, it seemed like maybe good was winning for now.
Yeah, I think that that's actually a really interesting point. When I was in South by Southwest this year, there was actually a talk about how you regulate online communities. And this concept, which is called counter speech, was something that was incredibly important. The idea that you shouldn't be silencing voices, any voices, whether they're hateful or not. But when there are hateful voices, you should go out of your way to essentially overpower them with a kind voice. And this is something that I think a lot of people have been exploring. And, you know, especially this is the case on Twitter, where there have been a lot of, you know, calls for support for certain things and as a way to assist people who've dealt with bombardments of trolls. But I think that it's something that I think we'll get a lot more exploration this year, especially as Twitter starts doing things like verifying more users, looking deeply into its policies and trying to figure out the best way to control this problem that has been there since the beginning of Twitter.
Well, moving on for now, we'll have some more Twitter news later. Microsoft released Q4 earnings today that were well above expectations, due in no small part to the customer momentum and interest in the cloud, says CEO Satya Nadella. But the real Microsoft news I would like to report today is that the company will no longer have an Xbox One exclusive of Rise of the Tomb Raider. The Lara Croft saga is coming to PS4 on October 11th, and you can play as the classic Lara Croft from the debut version in 1996. You can play in that new version. In honor of this, The Verge has a piece today showing how far we've come in representation in video games. Laura, you are a Tomb Raider fan. Do you agree with The Verge that this is a small hope for cultural progress?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how many people. Let me just pull out and dust off my old gaming history book. So the interesting thing about Lara Croft, when she debuted in 1996 in this action-adventure game called Tomb Raider, which was done by, I believe it was Eidos at the time, she was presented as this kind of sexy Indiana Jones in the same way that Joanna Dark of Perfect Dark was kind of like the sexy James Bond. And she was all curves, and all of the commercials were geared towards men with a female gaze, and it was... a big selling point was the idea that she was kind of like this hot sex pod adventurer, and she took no crap. And you definitely saw that, you know, in the movie version where Lara Croft was played by Angelina Jolie. It was a lot of eye candy. And, you know, a lot of people thought that that was kind of going to be the standard for Tomb Raider, but the property kind of waned in kind of the early mid-2000s. And what ended up happening is that it was revived by a company called Crystal Dynamics that essentially rebooted the entire series, starting over from basically Lara Croft's origin story as I believe she's a college intern explorer, and she ends up getting caught in this... smuggling and kidnapping and all of the stuff that you kind of expect in terms of high stakes adventure. And she turns out to be this really complex woman who tries to learn how to fight for herself. And she undergoes really, you know, dangerous tasks. And a lot of people have really praised the new Tomb Raider series, and especially Rise of the Tomb Raider, as this new way of looking at Lara Croft. So I definitely agree with The Verge. I think it's interesting to sort of go back and look at, you know, how far Lara Croft has come, what she's doing now, and maybe, hopefully, one day, I don't know, could we see Joanna Dark again? Half-Life 3? Anybody? Half-Life 3? Me. Okay. I'll wait.
I love your encyclopedic knowledge of video games. So thank you for that walk no down Lara Croft memory lane for all of us. After the break, Snapchat has a new potentially creepy patent, and we're going to talk about also Bitmoji on Snapchat. But first, let's take a minute to thank Igloo, the sponsor of this episode. People are using 30 different cloud services to get their work done every day. Whether you're using Salesforce, Zendesk, or Google Drive, it's harder than ever to keep track of everything. Now you can easily bring your cloud-based apps together in a modern intranet with Igloo integrations. Igloo is an intranet you'll actually like. It's a cloud platform that helps you share files, collaborate on documents, blog updates, coordinate calendars, and manage projects. Unlike other solutions, you can customize Igloo to fit your needs and work with your current IT investments like Office 365, Salesforce, SharePoint, Active Directory, file sharing solutions like Google Drive and Dropbox, and support systems like Zendesk. Igloo also offers a variety of access, authentication, and identity services to ensure that only authorized users have access in private clouds over SSL and with 256-bit encryption. Try it for free at igloosoftware.com/twit or sign up for a live demo to see it in action. When you sign up through our link, you can get your own Igloo for up to 10 people absolutely free for as long as you want. Just go to igloosoftware.com/twit. We have talked to our next guest in the past about Bitcoin, but today he's here to chat with us about a much more important currency, to me at least, and that is Bitmoji, which has officially come to Snapchat. Welcome, Ian Carr from Quartz.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks for coming back. So you say that before today, you never used Bitmoji before, which confirms my theory that they are much more popular with women. What do you think about that?
I have heard that they're popular with women and some older people, so like 30s and 40s.
Mm-hmm. Like me.
And, not me for sure. And I've heard of it, of course, but I never actually used it. I didn't. And then I saw the announcement today. I was like, oh, might as well give it a shot. And actually, it's actually pretty cool. I liked it a lot.
So I do think that it's amongst my friends. It is popular. I tried to introduce it to my 13-year-old daughter. She was like, what is this? Lauren, are you a fan of Bitmoji?
No.
See, okay, yeah, it is exactly. I think probably maybe 35 and up. It's an interesting choice for Snapchat now because I think this is an official sign that we older ladies have arrived on Snapchat. But tell us, Ian, how do you get it? Because I tried and I could not. So maybe the update hasn't rolled out to me yet.
Yeah, so I think it's rolled out. Basically, you gotta link your Bitmoji account to your Snapchat. Oh. So in the Snapchat settings, you could just go to the new option that says Bitmoji, and it's supposed to link up to your existing account. And if you don't have one like me, then it just moves you to the app where you start creating your own Bitmoji. And I think my friend helped me create mine, my coworker. So I think she did a pretty good job.
Yeah, I saw yours on your story. It looked like you. It was good.
It looked similar, I think.
So let's move on. Bitmoji on Snapchat. There's not a lot more to say about that. You wrote another interesting piece about a new patent that could use image recognition to send ads. What can you tell us about that?
Yeah, so before we get started, this is a patent application, so nothing's been granted yet. Mm-hmm. But I think the patent application itself is pretty interesting. Basically, Snapchat would be using object recognition to basically see if you're taking a picture of the Empire State Buildings, for instance, and they can maybe add a lens for a King Kong. Maybe if there's a King Kong movie, they could add a King Kong lens and start, I guess, kind of bring augmented reality a little bit more into the real world. I think that Snapchat lenses are really interesting as a form of augmented reality, and I think that kind of using this kind of object recognition to power to make that even more interesting is really cool. But also, I do think that there's some little, it's a little bit creepy and a little bit there's some privacy questions for a lot of for some consumers, I think.
So, Lauren, you don't use Bitmoji, but do you use Snapchat?
I do. And I think that there's a lot of really great value that's found. Snapchat is really sitting on a gold mine when it comes to these sponsored filters. So I think that any way that they can sort of enhance that even to create something new, you know, you can sort of see how they could, you know, if you take a snap of a Starbucks cup, they might be able to recognize that it's a Starbucks cup and put a whole new like animation geo filter, or as Ian says in his article, an ad to you or a coupon to you. So I think that there's a lot to be explored there, but I'm interested to see exactly how Snapchat's going to do it and do it with privacy in mind and also do it with the limitations of technology in mind.
So Ian, do the ads that are already on Snapchat, like the sponsored filters, they already do connect to your location sometimes, I think.
Definitely. Yeah, they definitely connect to your location. They're actually tremendously popular, too. For instance, the one, the popular Gatorade one during the Super Bowl got 160 million impressions, which is actually more than, like, the actual Super Bowl game. So these things are incredibly popular. And even if it's sponsored content and it's sponsored filters in this case, Snapchat's users don't seem to mind it at all. So I think it's really interesting to see that it seems like they're not as worried about the kind of, I feel like a lot of other social media companies like Facebook and Twitter, for instance, have had to balance the privacy aspect and the idea of developing new services that make money. And it seems like Snapchat's been able to do that while keeping their users pretty happy.
Yeah, I mean, like you said, this is a patent application, so it can be, you know, not necessarily useful to start spreading the news that, you know, Snapchat's going to know exactly where we are and see what we're taking pictures of. But you raise an interesting question, just that at this point, users of Snapchat do not seem to be bothered by ads. But do you think in the future that something like this would potentially be too much for them?
It's hard to say. I think it definitely could. I think that there's still a lot of weird connotations with the idea of, you know, a company looking at what your camera is seeing and looking what you're seeing. But in a lot of ways, this is a lot of basically what Google does with their search data, in a lot of ways too. You know, they use that search data to power their advertising, and Snapchat's using their camera data and what their users are taking to power their advertising as well. It's just that it'll be interesting to see whether the idea of image recognition and the privacy and the balance between privacy and how that plays out with these users, especially given Snapchat's young core demographic.
I agree, because I mean I go back and forth between, I think that the Snapchat ads don't bother younger people. They're just, I mean, they've grown up with ads in their social media. It's not the same as, you know, they're just used to it. Whereas, and I also think that Snapchat is very LA, like they're very, they're more entertainment based, I think, than a lot of the social networks that started in Silicon Valley. And I, you know, everyone who watches TV, goes to the movie theater is well used to advertisements. It's not integrated in the same way, but I wonder what that has to do with it as well.
Yeah, actually, it's funny you mentioned that. I was I came across a trailer the other day, and I was on Snapchat, and I was like, I've never actually heard of the movie before, so I actually really enjoyed it. So the ads over there are actually pretty interesting. I think they're well prepared and well thought out. So I think that's probably why a lot of the consumers don't really have a problem with the ads that are on Snapchat.
Lauren, what do you think about a company using what we're taking pictures of to deliver ads to us?
I feel like Snapchat already knows my face. I feel like they already know my face. So, I mean, I think we've already gone down this rabbit hole trying to figure out exactly what it means for us is really what's more important in the long run.
What do you think it means for us?
Yeah, I think I agree, actually. You know, privacy, sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off, Lauren, but I think that, you know, some people think of privacy as this really, you know, really important thing, but a lot of people, we give a lot of our data away nowadays. So I think that it'll be interesting to, but yeah, Lauren, I'd love to hear what you have to say, too.
They know everything. They know my face. I'm sure that they would be able to recognize, like, when I'm, like, you know, snapping like my bowl of Cinnamon Toast Crunch. I feel like, you know, at some point they're just going to be able to amass all this data and amass all this item recognition and use that in order to determine exactly what is in a photo, the same way that, you know, machine learning and Google especially has been able to do. And so I think that really, again, it's just like figuring out exactly how we give permission for this, how we give consent for this, what it means, who can access it. All of those things I think are going to be more important in the long term, especially, you know, if Snapchat tries to go more in its archival direction where you are able to look at what you've already posted there, because then it means that it does exist. So it does exist on their server somewhere. So it's kind of all really hinky at this point. I'd love to see whether or not they get this patent and whether or not they actually put it to fruition. Because, you know, everybody knows that Nokia has a patent to put, you know, a microchip in my arm. So whether it happens, I'd love to see the practical applications.
Maybe it's already happened and you just don't know.
That's an interesting thought.
Well, Ian, thank you so much for coming on. Like I said, Ian reports on Bitcoin and blockchain and also Snapchat and many other topics at Quartz. Is Quartz the best place to follow you, or is there another place where people should follow you, Ian?
The Quartz is definitely the best place to follow me. So, hope you guys read my stuff. Thanks a lot for having me.
Thanks so much. And that's QZ.com if you want to check that out. Thanks so much, Ian.
Thanks, you.
Ian.
Bill from Huntsville, Alabama writes, last November, I quit watching network news. This was in reference to the conversation that I had yesterday with Georgia Dow about how we can manage watching live streams of traumatic events. And Bill says he quit watching network news last year. I used to have a news channel on all day. Even though I have Facebook and Twitter accounts, I don't use their apps. I view posts in a browser. I have all notifications turned off on my phone. I have found that it's much less depressing than constantly being bombarded by news of the events going on in the world. So that is one way to do it. Lauren, how do you manage watching things that might be traumatic on Facebook Live or on Periscope or other places?
That's actually a really good question, because I feel like I'm one of those people who's very an empathetic watcher, and I have a very hard time with those sorts of things. I know that some people will go and they have no problem watching that kind of footage, and I respect and admire them for that and for their choice. My thing is just to be aware of what's out there, and if somebody tells me that there's something that I might see, I just kind of, maybe I scroll a little slower. Just scroll a little slower and know when it's coming and try to anticipate that.
You're also a traditional journalist. So how do you feel about, I mean, do you think these live streams, what role do you think they play in journalism? I mean, they often have no context. We don't know what happened before. We don't know what happened after. There's no gatekeepers. What do you see of the negatives of that?
You know, I think that it's really interesting, because I find that the live streams are incredibly important, especially in today's world. I think that personal testimony to events is incredibly important, and it's the way that we've been able to really see, like, actually see important events that have happened in movements like Black Lives Matter and, you know, other situations like dating back all the way to Arab Spring. I mean, we've been able to sort of account for live testimony, and I think that live video is an offshoot of that. But I also think that, yeah, it's really important to be aware and to understand, you know, when times of turmoil are happening, when news is flooding, you know, whatever social media that you're on, it's important to recognize your own limitations, because I think that there is a lot of truth in that, and there's a lot of power in that truth. But, you know, you're also not, you know, demanded or required to watch it if it's something that could personally hurt you. And that's the way that I sort of see it, is, you know, put yourself first, and you can understand and empathize with the situation at hand, but don't feel like you need to traumatize yourself in the service of truth. That makes sense.
That absolutely does. Well, in addition to being a trained journalist, an expert on Lara Croft, you, Lauren, also knew and were excited about Pokemon Go long before it hit the rest of us normals. After the break, we will talk about that. But first, let's take a minute to thank Trunk Club, the sponsor of this episode. Summer is here. It's time to spruce up your wardrobe with summer essentials like short sleeve button downs, lightweight blazers, and of course, swimwear. Whether you're looking for beach formal attire or grown-up graphic tees, Trunk Club is a shopping game changer for men and for women. With Trunk Club, you'll never have to step foot inside a store for your clothing needs again. Plus, you get your very own personal stylist for free. Just type in your measurements, share your style and your spending preferences, and you connect with the right Trunk Club stylist right away. He or she will connect with you via phone, email, or messenger to understand your unique look and learn more about what you're looking for. Your stylist will select items for your trunk from over 80 top brands, and they'll send you a preview of clothes that may be a good fit for you. Review your trunk via email. Make edits before it's shipped right to your door. You'll have 10 days to try on the clothes. Keep what you like. Send back the rest. Trunk Club is not a subscription service, and shipping is always free both ways. Premium clothes, expert advice, no work, thanks to your very own personal stylist at Trunk Club. And Trunk Club is backed by Nordstrom, which means they have the highest standards in quality and customer service. Make a statement at the next big event on your calendar with a look that's hand-picked just for you and your style. Get started today at trunkclub.com/TNT. Look and feel your best with clothes that fit you perfectly. That's trunkclub.com/TNT, and we thank Trunk Club for their support. Pokemon Go, the game that has made Nintendo worth more than Sony, will allegedly launch in Japan tomorrow. We're not sure. We don't think it has already launched, but it is already tomorrow in Japan. It will launch there soon. The game also will have its first sponsored location, McDonald's. Lauren, you've been a huge Pokemon fan even before Pokemon Go, even when it was not cool to be a Pokemon fan. What are your thoughts on the game's explosion?
Well, I think that it's really a testament to the impact that Pokemon has had, particularly, I would say, on my generation. The original Pokemon came out in 1996, Pokemon's Red and Blue. I had Red, Team Charmander all the way. But I played it. You know, I think that kids used to get caught up in the card game. They got caught up in the anime. It was a huge cultural touchstone, I think, for people in my immediate age group on up, probably. I would say like a good like 5 to 8 years in either direction. So, you know, you're talking about people who are, you know, in their 30s, people who are in their early 20s, you know, and people who still play, you know, Pokemon today. I mean, you know, Nintendo's releasing Pokemon Sun and Moon at the end of this year, and it's the new installment, and they've been, you know, showing off the starters and building excitement. So, you know, I think that people often think that perhaps the support of Pokemon or the nostalgia for Pokemon wasn't necessarily there, or they didn't necessarily know exactly what it entailed. But people are bananas about Pokemon. They just are.
So what are some tips for people trying to get started? I'm not sure what level I am. I know I'm not at level 5 because I haven't gotten to pick my team. Mm-hmm. And now maybe you're convincing me to pick the other team that I was told to pick. So I have to think about that. Oh. But what are some tips for someone who's just getting started?
Sure. So the important thing to know is that you have an opportunity to pick your starter Pokemon. You get Charmander, Bulbasaur, and Squirtle. You can pick those. It is not going to mean that you will not see those at all. I've run into all three of the starter Pokemon. If you do choose, you can actually choose neither of them. If you walk away from where you're standing for a few times, actually Pikachu will appear. And Pikachu is the starter Pokemon in Pokemon Yellow. And obviously he is the mascot. People love Pikachu. So if you're really super into Pikachu, you can actually get him on the first go if you really want to. The important thing about Pokemon Go is to experience it, walk around, to stop at all the Pokestops, make sure that you, you know, get into the habit of sort of spinning the signs and doing that. And the thing that I really learned when I started playing is that a lot of just garbage Pokemon are going to show up. Just Pokemon you're not interested in catching. You're like, I've seen a Pidgey like 40 times. I want nothing to do with this Pidgey. I just want it to go away. This is actually counterintuitive. Make sure you catch all those Pokemon because they're going to be really important if you ever want to evolve your Pokemon or level them up or make them stronger. Just keep catching them, and the great ones will come. The Pokemon that you are able to catch actually expand as you level up. So you'll be able to catch better Pokemon. You'll be able to catch stronger Pokemon over time. So don't get discouraged if you're just like drowning in a sea of Zubats and you're like, this is so awful. How am I supposed to like, all I want is a Venusaur. Like, you'll get there.
It's sort of a good metaphor for life, right? Like, your first couple of jobs might be Pidgeys and Xenophore, with Xenophore is good or bad.
Zubats
and Pidgeys, Zubat all your first, but keep working at it, keep plugging away, and eventually you'll get to the Zubat.
The Venusaur. You're good. You're all good. Okay. The important thing is to know that, and also this is really a key part of it, which is that just, you know, go everywhere and try everything. I think that a lot of people are concerned that, you know, they might miss out on something or they might not see something. But, you know, the whole point of the game is to get out and explore. And hopefully, if you do it right, you'll also find some really interesting things in your town that you might not have seen before.
So do you recommend the various things you can see online, the hacks, like for hatching eggs? Like, there was one on Tech Insider where you can put your phone on a turntable and spin it. You don't support those?
You know, I am a purist. I don't like cheating very much. I was one of the kids who didn't own a Game Genie. That's like not my thing. But if you're really interested in min-maxing your game, sure, do you, you know, do whatever you need to do. But I think that it's really important that you play the game the way that you want to be, if you want to play the game, and just explore. And that's really the best part about Pokemon is finding new and interesting monsters that you haven't seen before.
Okay, so you don't judge, but you don't support that. What about the Pokemon side hustle? Have you heard that? Like, people who will offer to pay. What do you think of that? Pay me and I'll go running with your phone to hatch your eggs.
Pokewalkers, babysitters. Every once in a while, you'll get somebody on Craigslist offering to be a Pokemon Go security guard. You know, it's one of those things where if you're going to spend like $1,000 on Candy Crush, or if you're going to, you know, try to min-max your way through a game like, you know, Diablo or an MMORPG, like, you know, everybody has their own style. And I'm super boring. I just like to follow the rules. I'm sorry. I just enjoy it for the experience. But, you know, I think that there's no right or wrong way to do it. And yeah, you know what? If you want to give a dude who lives down the street from you $20 to like walk your phone around the block, like, all right. But at the same time, you know, that's game experience and exercise that you're missing out on. And So what does that say about you?
Yes. And let's make sure you know the dude that lives down the block, or else you become one of those list of headlines of people that you hear something happened while you were playing Pokemon Go.
Yeah.
Fill in the blank with whatever horrible or ridiculous thing you want to fill in.
As with anything, you know, just exercise good judgment. That's really it. You know?
Yeah.
Think about it.
Any other Pokemon Go tips?
Don't be concerned if you get your butt kicked at a gym, because it happens to everybody.
Okay.
So don't worry about that. But everything else, just have fun.
Well, I have to say that you tweeted about the actual gym last week, I think. And I read it a couple times over and over again. I was like, she's talking about a real gym, not a Pokemon gym. I got it.
Yeah.
So you got to be careful with the word gym these days.
I know. Yeah. That people got a little bit confused too, but yeah, I actually go to the regular gym and I go to the Pokemon gym next to my regular gym. I actually have my roommate, his gym and a Pokemon gym are the same. His gym is a Pokemon gym.
Well,
that's
I think
too much.
I think our gym here in Petaluma also is the same, which is good. That's
it's
good.
Focus up.
It's a Pokestop. Okay, sorry. Anthony, our technical director, Pokemon expert, only second to you, says it's a Pokestop, not a gym.
Yeah, it's totally fine. But people were really confused. And then I had to tell them, no, I just go outside and get exercise sometimes.
All right. Well, thank you so much for all those tips. TNT's fan of the day is John Morkey, who says it's a beautiful day for a run. Speaking of running, I'm assuming he listens to TNT that way, not watching. Don't run and watch video podcasts unless you're on a treadmill or running in a Pokemon gym. don't do that. But show us how you watch or listen to TNT. Record a video, take a picture of yourself and your setup. Post it on Instagram, Google+, Twitter, Facebook. Use the hashtag HowIWatchTNT. If you want to keep your TNT watching a secret from your social media followers, you can also email me your picture directly to Megan@twit.tv. We'll show it on the show, but then you don't have to blast it to your followers. So I accept that too. After the break, everyone can now be a verified or apply to be a verified user on Twitter. You'll have to still follow their rules and get through their Byzantine and possibly broken application process. But first, let's take a minute to thank ZipRecruiter, the sponsor of this episode. Are you hiring? Do you know where to post your job to find the best candidates fast? Posting jobs in one place is not enough to find quality candidates. If you want to find the perfect hire, you need to post your job on all the top job sites. And with ZipRecruiter, now you can. With ZipRecruiter.com, you can post to more than 100 job boards, including social media networks like Facebook and Twitter, all with a single click. Just post once and watch your candidates roll into ZipRecruiter's easy-to-use interface. Search by skills, location, work experience, and more. ZipRecruiter's advanced matching technology delivers the most relevant candidates based on your criteria. ZipRecruiter offers optimized pages that look great on any screen. Add their unique mobile apply process for more visitors and more applicants. Find candidates in any city or industry nationwide. No more juggling emails or calls to your office. You can add multiple users to your account. Find out today why ZipRecruiter has been used by over 800,000 businesses and is trusted by hundreds of Fortune 500 companies. More than 125 million candidate applications have been delivered. Whether you're hiring now or plan to hire in the near future, check out their blog for recruiting tips and hiring resources. Right now, you can post jobs on ZipRecruiter for free by going to ZipRecruiter.com/TNT. Access millions of resumes on ZipRecruiter with thousands of new ones added daily. ZipRecruiter is the fastest way to hire great people. Go to ZipRecruiter.com/TNT, and we thank ZipRecruiter for their support of Tech News Today. I promised a little more Twitter news. Today they announced that anyone can apply to be a verified user on Twitter and be given the honorary blue check mark. All you have to do is give them your birthday, your email address, your website, your firstborn child. Not your firstborn child. You don't have to give them that. They already had my email address, but the form, I tried to fill out the form. It kept telling me I had to send... I had to give them my email address to verify, but if they had my email address, I even changed it to a different email address. So I remain checkless for now. And maybe after I finish the form, they will still not deem me worthy. Aside from removing a bit of the mystery behind Twitter's caste system, this will also maybe give people more access to anti-abuse features that currently exist for verified users. What do you think, Lauren?
Yeah, part of me is really excited that they finally opened up the verification process. Another smaller part of me is really sad to see that my blue check will now be worth nothing. But
well,
you
still have to be verified. Everybody can't be verified.
I think the really important thing about Twitter moving towards doing a more universal verification system is that it does ultimately end up tying your account to your identity. And that's actually really important. In addition to having the tools that are available for verified users and also the added benefits, if I recall correctly, although I could be mistaken, I think only verified users are still allowed, only they are allowed to send links in DMs, but I can send links to people. But I think that the important piece of it is also that it's Twitter's first step in moving towards a more verified group of people. You know, the idea people have about Twitter is that it's currently just populated with eggs and anime characters that are, you know, sock puppet accounts or bots. And moving towards a system where there's a more universal verification could ultimately end up being a boon for Twitter in solving its online harassment and also its general different policies surrounding language and community.
Yeah, I would hope. I mean, what we wouldn't want is for it to turn into Facebook, where you have to be yourself. You can't use a fake name. There's been a lot of downsides for that as well. So, I mean, there are advantages to Twitter being anonymous sometimes.
True. And I think that it's really important that, as far as I can tell, in terms of the verification process, you can verify yourself As long as you can verify yourself, I don't know if that necessarily means that they won't allow you to verify yourself as an entity. For example, you know, certain media outlets, as companies, and other places have their own company verified. It'll be interesting to see how they handle Twitter's personalities that aren't necessarily people, whether or not they're able to offer verification to them under the condition that they can still keep, you know, whatever they're running, Shiba Inu bot, but they'll be able to have the ability to use all those tools. And I think that that's kind of an interesting middle ground to that, is that if Twitter has the ability to understand and verify its users and understand who its user base is, regardless of how they behave on Twitter, they may be able to better isolate bad actors. They may be able to give people more tools, and they just may be able to understand a little bit more about who their community is.
Exactly. I mean, like I said, I don't think they're asking anything to prove that the name I'm giving them, I don't know if they're verifying my birthday. It's weird that you have to have a website. I mean, everyone doesn't have a website. But yeah, I think that when I was filling out the form and the first couple of times it didn't work, I feel like I have a little bit of PTSD because, you know, there's so many times like you fill out forms blocking people or reporting people who are impersonating you and then nothing happens. Mm-hmm. And that's so frustrating. And so I think I really just like filling out forms at Twitter. I was just like, I don't even care. I don't let other people have the blue check.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But I think that it's also really important because then if you file that one form and it's done, then you won't have to file those other forms, hopefully.
Right.
Like that's really the ideal, is that it moves towards a place that makes Twitter maybe a little bit more accountable to its users and also makes its users a little bit more accountable to Twitter.
Exactly. Well, Lauren, thank you so much for joining us. Any final words of wisdom on Pokemon Go, fashion, journalism?
No, I mean, I think we really got it all covered, although I am interested in seeing if I can go on a Tech News Today and not talk about Pokemon, but who knows? Maybe it'll just become my low-key. You guys will know. You and Jason will just say, Lauren's going to be here. Got to put in that Pokemon. She knows all about it.
Well, we know you know a lot about other things as well. So, yes, I'm looking forward to talking to you again. People should subscribe to your Nothing Matters podcast and follow you on Twitter. And any place else they should follow you?
Yeah. Those are really the best places. And just as a warning, I do talk about tech news on my Twitter, but I also post a lot of pictures of dogs. So
thank you.
Disclaimer.
Thank you. Just a trigger warning for everyone. Lots of pictures of dogs. Thank you.
Lots of dogs. Lots of dogs.
Thanks so much, Lauren. Take care.
Thank you.
Tomorrow's guest will be Ian Thompson from The Register. TNT records live every Monday through Friday at 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern, 11 p.m. UTC at twit.tv/live. You can be part of the show by emailing us at tnt@twit.tv or leaving us a short voicemail at 260-TNT-SHOW. You can also find us on Twitter at Tech News Today TV and find all the ways to subscribe to our show at twit.tv/TNT. And if you want to tweet at me, I am Megan Maroney. And thanks to our technical director, Anthony. Thanks to Burke for running the teleprompter and all the folks who help us produce this show every single day. Thanks to you for talking tech with us. We'll see you tomorrow.